It's interesting that 70% of the country does like the idea of drug testing. I like the idea. They do it to athletes. They do it to horses in horse racing. Why not do it to presidential candidates? I like the idea.
Do you, Sean? Do you like the idea? Careful what you wish for, Bubba.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe for you every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Your mileage may or may not vary. Glad to have you here with us for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
You don't have COVID today, do you?
Thank goodness, no.
I don't have COVID today either.
Yay.
That's 2 days in a row. Woo-hoo. We'll do our best to keep it that way for at least a few more days as voters in Oklahoma, Virginia, and Virginia headed to the polls on Tuesday for congressional primary races and in, of course, my favorite voting state of Georgia for a congressional primary runoff. Happy to say, once again today, I have yet to see reports of problems for voters at the polls. As always, however, we will be keeping our eyes open for that and any problems reported in tabulations in the days ahead. If there are results of note from Tuesday's contest, of course, we will have those for you on our next broadcast. For the record, voters in Colorado, New York, and Utah, hello, you all have until next Tuesday, June 25, to vote in your state's congressional primaries, including another special election, by the way, for the U.S. House in Colorado's 4th Congressional District. That will then be the final set of primary elections until after the Republican National Convention, which will be held from July 15 through July 18. So just a little bit less than a month away at this point, in what former president, current presidential frontrunner, and convicted felon Donald Trump recently described as the, quote, horrible city of Milwaukee. In theory, the party will officially nominate a 34-time convicted felon who is still facing another 55 felony charges as their standard bearer for this November's presidential election at that convention. Anyway, more on him in a bit, and the if we have time for it, the attempt by folks on the right, as you heard Sean Hannity there at the top, actually trying to lower expectations.
Oh, yes, they are.
For Trump's performance in the upcoming debate, which is less than a week away, the first presidential debate of the year, should be a very interesting one. Anyway, more on all that in a moment, but as we always try to keep our eyes on previous elections where there were questions or complications for voters or candidates, since, as I've noted many times, those problems do not always come to light right away on or just after Election Day. Here's an issue from the 2022 midterm elections that is still roiling around in the courts for some stupid reason. In a story that I wasn't able to cover during my latest bout with COVID last week, but I want to make sure this does not slip through the cracks for those of you keeping track at home. Arizona Republican Kari Lake has lost yet again. The losing Republican candidate for governor in 2022 in the state, who has repeatedly lost in her court challenges to the election results from that year in challenge after challenge after challenge. Well, she has lost yet another challenge over that same contest that she lost to then Democratic Secretary of State, now Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs. The inveterate loser Lake last week lost an Arizona appeals court challenge seeking to overturn the results of that 2022 election in Arizona, arguing that thousands of Phoenix area mail ballot signatures were not properly verified when she lost that year's gubernatorial race. The State Court of Appeals upheld a judge's finding last year that Lake failed to prove inconsistencies in signatures were neglected by election verification staffers in Maricopa County, that is home to Phoenix, and more than 60% of voters in that state. Lake's attorney, Brian James Blem, I think that's what it is, did not respond last week to questions from AP about this latest loss and as to whether Lake would now appeal that loss to the Arizona Supreme Court, though I don't see why she would not want to keep her, keep her losing track record going, along with her vow to supporters, as I recall, to take the matter all the way up to the state Supreme Court, no matter what, with the use, by the way, of their money, her supporters' money, to wage her losing campaign, even as she is now running for U.S. Senate this fall.
Yeah, well, she has to keep going in order to keep getting that money from the MAGA rubes who are going to continue paying her.
Keep the grift up. Nor, by the way, did her attorney, Blem, respond to a request for comments about sanctions that were imposed on him just over a week ago by the state bar of Arizona for, quote, unequivocally false representations to the state Supreme Court while handling Lake's election challenges. His 60-day suspension from the bar takes effect on July 7th. So where are we here? Yeah. So I guess if he's going to file that losing appeal for sore loser Lake at the Supreme Court, he better get to work quickly on that. Well, he still has a license. Lake is considered the GOP frontrunner for the party's U.S. Senate nomination, the Republican Party's nomination, ahead of the state's July 30 party primary to face Democratic U.S. Rep. Ruben Gallego this November for the seat currently being held by former Democrat turned independent or something, Kyrsten Sinema, who is mercifully not seeking a second term. Lake lost to Hobbs statewide in 2022 by more than 17,000 votes. Presiding Appeals Court Judge Sean Brercliff noted in the court's ruling that Lake argued more than 8,000 ballots were, quote, maliciously configured to cause a tabulator rejection, presumably by Maricopa's Republican election registrar and the county's Republican majority county commission that run elections in Maricopa. So it was maliciously misconfigured by those Republicans to prevent the Republican gubernatorial candidate from winning back in 2022. Sure, that makes sense. That checks
well,
out.
It sounds like a lot of work for people who are already really busy, but okay.
But here's the thing. The judge here noted that those 8,000 ballots, that in fact, all of those ballots actually were counted. Now, she's claiming that they were not, but in fact, they were counted. And as the judge noted, that even if all 8,000 of those allegedly uncounted votes had been for Lake, That still would not have been enough to overcome the 17,000 vote differential between Lake and Hobbs. But I totally think she should try one more time at the state Supreme Court. And then, hey, you know, who knows? Maybe she can figure out how to waste donor money to bring the case to the U.S. Supreme Court. Why not? It will also be tossed there, yes, even by this corrupted U.S. Supreme Court, because that's how ridiculous and evidence-free that Lake's 2022 election challenges remain at this point. But hey, you know what? Keep going. You got to keep that grift going, Carrie.
Keep that grifter gravy train going on.
In more recent elections, last week, amid South Carolina's congressional primaries, the newspaper known as The State reported on Election Day that, quote, there have been reports of a mass text going around Spartanburg County that appeared to be impersonating Spartanburg County voter registration offices. That was reported on Election Day in the afternoon, a week ago Tuesday. The Post and Courier then offered a few more details. They report the Spartanburg County Elections Office did not send mass text messages June 11 that accused Republican state rep Rob Harris of voter intimidation. Harris denied the accusation made in the message. The message said, quote, warning, we are receiving reports that state rep Rob Harris is intimidating voters at Spartanburg County voting precincts. And it tells the recipients to contact the Spartanburg County Voter Registration and Elections Office. County spokesperson Scotty K. Blackwell said the county did not send those messages. Quote, the text message may read as if it's coming from our Voter Registration and Elections Office, but we do not text voters, she told the paper in an email. State Election Commission spokesperson John Catalano said his agency found out about the issue the morning of June 11, that would be Election Day, and said, quote, they immediately contacted the county. We then notified SLED, the South Carolina State Law Enforcement Division, after we confirmed that the text message did not originate from their office. That's all we know about it at this point, he said. A state law enforcement division spokesperson said, quote, SLED is aware and is assisting Spartanburg County. This is not a SLED investigation at this time. Harris, the House District 36 incumbent, could not be immediately reached for comment. But in a post on Facebook, he said, quote, I'm literally standing outside a precinct having a nice chat with two other candidates. But, you know, the enemy is scared of you. When they resort to dirty tricks like this illegitimate text message that just went out. Okay. I guess in this case, the, quote, enemy would be a fellow Republican, because this was Harris was running in a Republican primary last week. I guess that's who he meant. His opponent, a town councilman by the name of Adam Crisp, could also not immediately be reached for comment late last week when this story was first reported. But I actually saw it, as I said, on Election Day and figured we'd wait to see if we could learn more about it, you know, before figuring out if this was something worth reporting or not. But alas, I have not been able to find anything since late last week on this. So for the moment, who knows what to make of it? Harris is suggesting his opponent, Crisp, I guess, was behind this dirty trick. But who actually knows at this point? It could have been done by anyone. Anyone. In truth, including foreign adversaries hoping to stoke division for some reason in this race. U.S. officials are very concerned about exactly that happening this year, particularly in the presidential election. When I warn, as I do, that democracy itself is under attack, well, I don't only mean by Donald Trump and forces from the American right. Unfortunately, we should presume they will once again continue to get a lot of help in their democracy undermining schemes from adversarial forces abroad. AP reports That U.S. officials who track disinformation campaigns say they have issued more warnings to political candidates, government leaders, and others targeted by foreign groups in recent months as America's adversaries seek to influence the outcome of the 2024 election. Without giving specifics, an official from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence said last week that the number is higher, at least in part, because, quote, presidential elections draw more attention from our adversaries. Lawmakers from both parties, claims AP, have voiced warnings about the nation's preparedness for foreign disinformation during the presidential election and the corrosive impact it has on voter confidence and trust in democratic institutions. They also have questioned whether the federal government is up to the task of issuing timely and effective warnings to voters when nations like Russia and China use disinformation to try to shape American politics. Now, whether Republican lawmakers have voiced worries about this, as AP suggests, or have voiced them particularly loudly, I've yet to notice. In fact, Republicans have spent the bulk of the last 4 years criticizing government officials and their attempts to warn voters by, for example, notifying social media outlets when disinformation about the election is circulating. Republicans have gone to great ends to prevent the government from doing that. They've passed laws in several states. They've taken challenges all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, attempting to prevent government officials from taking the action that AP here is suggesting, quote, both parties have been warning about. In any event, as AP continues, influence operations can include false or exaggerated claims and propaganda designed to mislead voters about specific candidates, issues, or races. It can also include social media posts or other digital content that seeks to suppress the vote through intimidation or by giving voters false information about election procedures. Russia, according to these officials, was the top threat. This is from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, noting that its main objectives, Russia's, are degrading public support for Ukraine and eroding confidence in American democracy in general. China is considered to be more cautious about its online disinformation campaigns and more concerned that more concerned than Russia about potential blowback from the U.S., according to officials. Iran is seen as a, quote, chaos agent that is more likely to experiment with online techniques to stoke voter anger and even violence. Officials would not specify how many private warnings that they have issued to candidates and political organizations or local election offices. Such warnings are delivered after an interagency panel of intelligence officials concludes that an influence operation could impact the outcome of an election or prevent certain groups from voting. The notifications, according to one of these DNI sources, are only given when officials can attribute the operation to foreign sources, allowing the person or group that was targeted to, quote, take a more defensive stance. The office within the intelligence community that leads this work, the Foreign Malign Influence Center, has no jurisdiction over domestic groups doing the same thing. So if, in fact, the apparent dirty trick I mentioned last week out of South Carolina, if that was carried out by an American, the federal agencies would not take any action on it. Only if they could show that, or if it was believed at least, that it was somehow thanks to a foreign actor. The officials who briefed reporters last week said they work to avoid any appearance of policing Americans' speech or playing favorites when it comes to candidates. Intelligence officials have issued only one public warning so far. That would be in 2020 when groups linked to Iran were said to have sent emails to Democratic voters in an apparent attempt to intimidate them into voting for Donald Trump. Powerful AI programs that allow the rapid creation of false, misleading, and disinformative images, audio, and video pose a growing problem, in particular as adversaries look to use the technology to create lifelike fakes that could easily mislead voters. We saw some of that already, the use of AI ahead of elections in India and Mexico and Moldova and Slovakia and Bangladesh and, yes, in the U.S., where you may recall some voters earlier this year up in New Hampshire received an AI robocall mimicking the voice of President Joe Biden, telling them don't waste their vote, save it for later, or some other nonsense. AI deepfakes used by U.S. adversaries remains a top threat, according to officials. And then, of course, though the AP story doesn't mention it, there's just good old mass computer interference and hacking that I assume officials are also very worried about in the lead up to November, right? If not, the European Union, their parliamentary elections just over a week ago in dozens of European countries, well, that should serve as a very red flag, it seems to me. As Euronews reported a week or so ago, the websites of at least three political parties in the Netherlands were targeted as Dutch voters cast their ballots in the European elections. A pro-Kremlin hacker group claimed responsibility for what seemed to be a coordinated attack on the websites of Dutch political parties and EU institutions on the first day of the four-day European elections just over a week ago. At least three Dutch political parties, the Christian Democratic Appeal, the Party for Freedom, and the Forum for Democracy, all claimed that their websites were targeted by cyber attacks on the first day of voting. A hacker group named Hacknet, who is affiliated with Moscow, claimed responsibility for the attack on its Telegram channel, adding that it had also targeted the Dutch Reformed Political Party and the European Court of Auditors. That website, the European Court of Auditors, according to Euronews, was also, in fact, down on that day, that first day of voting. In a statement, a spokesperson from the court said, quote, "We confirm that since this morning we are experiencing a cyber attack." They said it was a distributed denial of service or DDoS attack, which, quote, "has rendered our internet site non-operational." Again, on the first day of voting across dozens of EU countries, the Christian Democratic Appeal Party, which is affiliated with the center-right European People's Party, said in a statement on Twitter that on that same day that its website was, quote, "temporarily less accessible due to a, quote, serious DDoS attack." The leader of the hard right Forum for Democracy Party also took to Twitter to announce that his party's website was also down. The website of Geert Wilders, far-right Party for Freedom, was also down on that same day. So if this hacker group actually did it, and if they had a political reason, a political point of view for doing it, it was not necessarily apparent from the groups that they appear to be targeting from across a broad political spectrum. If anything else, it seems to have been more an attempt to cause chaos, to wreak havoc. And I don't know enough about Dutch or even European politics to know, who that might or might not have advantaged on that particular day. But it does seem an attempt to cause chaos.
Well, yes, if your goal is to either cause chaos or foment more division in an already divided area and elections, then, yeah, that would make sense as a method to do so.
The attacks came amid concerns that the election, which is the biggest transnational ballot in history, concerns that it was vulnerable to efforts by malign foreign actors to subvert the vote. The officials added that in several EU countries, including Italy, Spain, Germany, and Poland. Campaigns aimed at spreading disinformation around the vote had been detected in the days just prior to the elections, including efforts to dissuade voters from going to the ballot boxes at all or to encourage them to spoil their vote. Hacknet is a hacking network that, according to some Western cybersecurity firms, works in coordination with the Russian intelligence services. The group announced on its Telegram channel earlier that morning that it was, quote, the internet infrastructure, that it was targeting, quote, the internet infrastructure of Europe to mark the start of voting in the European Parliament elections. As far as the results of that election, as we reported last week, with the far right picking up a number of seats in the EU Parliament, particularly out of France and Germany, well, those results might be regarded as a bit of a red flag for American voters this year. But I would also add that these attacks on that election by adversaries, be it through disinformation operations or malicious attacks on computers and voting infrastructure, well, that seems to me that should also very much be taken as a red flag for our own elections this year as well. I suspect you will hear, in fact, I know you will hear, because I heard it via a story or two just today, that our elections here in the U.S. in 2024, they're the most secure elections in history. You don't need to worry. And to some extent, well, that might be true in that there are more people, more security officials trying to watch our voting systems, trying to watch the internet on election days and things like that, trying to watch election infrastructure more closely than ever before. To that extent, that is true. But that does not mean that they are ultimately more secure. That we will see how secure they are, but it will, as always, require vigilance from all of us and must include efforts by the public to try and oversee as much of our elections as possible. Election officials tend to downplay that aspect of all of this, along with the threats that really do affect our elections, because they don't want to give the impression that our elections are somehow vulnerable, because I think they believe that will, you know, dampen turnout. And they don't want to give oxygen, understandably, to the right-wing MAGA extremists out there like Carrie Lake, who simply make up nonsense, who latch on to any problem they can find and turn it into a reason to overturn the election, despite any evidence to actually support that nonsense, at least to be able to claim that the election was stolen from them or that the results were wrong. So I get it. I do get it. I do get who they're, you know, who they don't want to feed with more, grist for the mill. But telling people that our elections are secure when we know, in truth, that they're actually quite vulnerable in multiple ways that, you know, we can try to mitigate now if we know about those problems and if we participate in the electoral process, not just as voters, but as poll workers and as observers, etc. Being straight with the American people about all of this will make it much more difficult for the liars and losers like Carrie Lake to manipulate public opinion with otherwise easily falsifiable information. Falsifiable claims that, oh, if only they had checked the signatures on those 7,000 ballots, I would have won, even though I lost the race by, 17,000 votes. Anyway, have I mentioned lately that we all sort of need to buckle up over the next, 4.5 months at this point?
At least.
Because it's not just through Election Day, it is beyond Election Day, as hopefully people figured out from the last couple elections in this country. It ain't over on Election Day. So buckle up. Yeah, it's going to be a bumpy ride for a few months. So if I haven't warned you lately, well, consider yourself warned. More warnings. Some bad news also from the New York courts for Donald Trump today. This is sad. And also Desi Doyen's Green News Report. All of that still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't hack that dial.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
New York, like a scene from all those but you're real enough to me. But there's a heart that lives in you.
Well, New York has not been disappointing us of late, their legal system. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. New York's top court on Tuesday declined to hear the appeal by Donald Trump to his ongoing gag order in his hush money case, the hush money and 2016 presidential election interference case, in fact, leaving the restrictions on Trump in place following his felony convictions last month. The Court of Appeals, which is actually New York's highest court, found that the order barring Trump from attacking witnesses or jurors or the family of prosecutors or the daughter of the New York judge overseeing the case does not raise, quote, substantial constitutional issues that would warrant an immediate intervention. In other words, the Court of Appeals, the High Court, said they might decide to intervene in the future, but for now they do not believe that allowing the gag order to stay in place threatens any of Trump's, you know, constitutional rights to cause him any particular irreparable harm for the time being, as sentencing in the case has not yet even occurred, much less a beginning to the appeals process for the verdict itself. The decision on Tuesday is the latest legal setback for Donald Trump, who has repeatedly railed against the gag order, but it could be short-lived. The trial judge in this case, Juan Merchan, is expected to rule soon on a defense request to lift the gag order himself. That ruling may come in advance of Trump's June 27 debate with President Joe Biden, but we shall see. Trump's attorneys filed a notice of appeal with the state's high court back on May 15 during the former president's landmark criminal trial. They argued that the gag order restricted Trump's, quote, core political speech on matters of central importance at the height of his presidential campaign. That would include, I guess, his core political speech rights to attack the daughter of a judge overseeing his criminal case and to attack the jurors sitting overseeing that case. But New York's high court, they disagreed. On Tuesday, the court said it would not automatically hear the case. They wrote that, quote, no substantial constitutional questions are directly involved. During the trial, Merchan held Trump in contempt of court, fined him $10,000 for violating the gag order at least 10 different times, and threatened to include jail time as well for further violations, which he clearly has violated since the last time Judge Merchan talked about it. So we'll see if that jail time arrives. So the order remains in effect right now, weeks after the conclusion of the trial, which ended with Trump's conviction on 34 counts of falsifying business records to hide hush money payments to help him cheat to win the 2016 election. Trump is scheduled to be sentenced on July 11. That would be just days before the start of the Republican National Convention in what he describes as the, quote, horrible city of Milwaukee. In the meantime, I am pleased to say that the Biden campaign, the Biden-Harris campaign, after Democrats were strangely circumspect in their response to the presumptive GOP nominee for the presidency being, you know, now a 34-time convicted felon, I'm happy to see that the Democrats seem to be figuring this out and figuring out that, hey, maybe this is something that might be good for us in this, you know, political election coming up.
Yeah, reminding people that, hey, that guy at the Republican Party that they're nominating is a convicted felon. Remember?
Maybe we ought to talk about that or something. Well, now the campaign, at least, seems to be taking on that task full-throatedly. The first piece of evidence, I think, was this ad that was released on Monday, I believe. But it had it's even more visually stunning. But I will play you the audio from it to give you the idea.
In the courtroom, we see Donald Trump for who he is. He's been convicted of 34 felonies, found liable for sexual assault, and he committed financial fraud. Meanwhile, Joe Biden's been working, lowering health care costs and making big corporations pay their fair share. This election is between a convicted criminal who's only out for himself and a president who's fighting for your family.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
There you go. Nice. Was that so hard? For Democrats, you know, even though everything in that is true, I mean, that's a downright attack ad from Democrats. But again, it's all true. So it was kind of strange then to see this headline from the New York Times on Monday in response to that ad. Headline, Biden campaign ad paints Trump as a felon. Paints him as a felon? He is a felon.
You don't have to
New
paint
York
him
Times
as such.
Is right. It's not like they're painting him. It's trying to make him look like he's a felon. He is a felon.
You can say that, New York Times.
I'm sure that the New York Times has heard the news about that, right? And the story's first paragraph sort of continued with that strange take. President Biden's campaign on Monday began its most aggressive effort to brand former President Donald Trump as a felon. What the? With the introduction of a new television advertisement that focuses on the presumptive Republican presidential nominee's criminal conviction. So they concede that, you know, he has been convicted. New York Times knows that much. So apparently they did hear the news. So why would the Biden administration be issuing an aggressive effort to brand him that way when he is well and legally branded? Or Brandon. Anyway, I guess it's that liberal New York Times again. They wouldn't want to offend any Republicans who might think that Donald Trump wasn't a convicted felon, I guess, just in case, you know, both sides. After blowback, however, from critics on Monday, apparently the Times changed their headline. Instead of Biden campaign ad paints Trump as a felon, it now reads Biden campaign ad calls attention to Trump's felon status. Was that so hard? Do we have to police every damned headline and every line of text from these so-called liberal media outlets?
Apparently.
But the good news for now, anyway, is that Democrats are at least are getting it, understanding that they need to go on the offensive here on this issue before Republicans all but convince their brain poison dupes that, you know what, Donald Trump was never actually convicted at all of any felonies. Because, you know, that's what they're going to try. And if there was any question after the release of that 30-second ad, an email sent out by the Biden-Harris campaign late on Monday after that ad was released. Well, this email, I think, should remove any doubt that the Democrats, or at least the Biden-Harris campaign in this case, at least for now, finally seem to get it. As next week, Biden and Trump will be having their first debate. This mass email to supporters from the Biden-Harris campaign starts this way, under the headline, Trump's debate lies show how scared he is. Donald Trump is a liar and a fraud. His campaign is full of liars and frauds, and their desperate leaks and lies to the right-wing media only underscore how scared Donald Trump is to debate. This is Donald's debate playbook. Lies, distractions, and deceit. Donald Trump and his campaign are scared because they can't defend his record, his personal conduct, or extreme agenda in front of the American people. Donald can't defend that he is a criminal who has been convicted of 34 felonies, was found liable for sexual assault, committed financial fraud, and is only out for himself. And that's just the first paragraph of this thing. Good for them. It continues. Donald can't defend his endorsement of state abortion bans, including ones that track women's pregnancies, threaten access to IVF, and punish women. Donald can't defend that he has the worst jobs record of any modern American president and oversaw the largest increase in the murder rate on record. Again, this is not me pointing out these things. This is the Biden-Harris campaign. Good for them. Donald can't defend his economic agenda of higher prices for working Americans and Social Security cuts, all so he can give corporations and billionaires more tax handouts. Donald can't defend that he's unhinged about losing by 7 million votes to Joe Biden in 2020, is proposing to be a, quote, dictator on day one and a violent, quote, bloodbath when he loses in November. Donald can't defend his actions on or leading up to January 6. Donald can't defend his extreme Supreme Court nominees. Donald can't defend being a lifelong racist who failed black and brown America as president. Donald can't defend wanting to rip away health care protections for more than 100 million Americans. Again, this is a mass email from the Biden-Harris campaign. You go for it. Donald can't defend insulting veterans, law enforcement, and the American people. We are at an inflection point as a nation. Our freedoms, our democracy, our middle class, our leadership on the world stage are all at stake. To lead America, the land of possibilities, you need a vision for the future of what America can and should be. Donald Trump does not have a vision of anything beyond the failure he sees in the mirror. Well, that's going to leave a mark. Now, I assume that Trump, must be out there, or his surrogates must be out there lying about something regarding the debate. To be honest, I have not followed closely what he or his people have been out there, claiming about it. But after, demanding debates for months and Joe Biden finally saying, sure, let's go, let's have some debates. Well, it would not surprise me in the least if Donald Trump is out there hoping to figure out a way to wriggle out of these debates, because they may not go well for them, especially if Democrats are, if what I just read to you is what they plan on bringing up at the debate. And frankly, I hope they do. TJ Ducklow, the Biden-Harris 2024 senior advisor for communications, he finishes the email, or she finishes the email, with a direct quote. Donald Trump has been playing games around debates for years, lying about negotiations, bailing at the last minute, and making insane accusations about moderators and microphones, all because he's terrified to defend the dangerous and extreme things he's done and promises to do again. Joe Biden will be at the debate, standing up for our democracy, our freedoms, and the American people. If Trump would like to sit down behind his podium, he can, but we're worried he may fall asleep if he shows up at all. So like I say, I have not been following the politics very closely on this in recent days, as I was under the weather. Desi, you did find this clip of Trump's best buddy, his BFF, Sean Hannity, over on Fox News, speaking, I think, last night. With Trump's daughter-in-law and the co-chair of the Republican Party, Laura Trump, seemingly trying to vastly lower expectations for Donald Trump in next week's debate. That after spending months claiming that they could not wait to debate Joe Biden because, he can barely string two words together. So here's Sean trying to walk back and lower expectations, I guess, for the convicted felon before next week.
The former president, took on the challenge. I don't think he'll regret it. However, the Joe Biden that we're talking about tonight, I don't think will be the Joe Biden we're going to see on debate night. I think the Joe Biden we see on debate night is going to be the guy that we saw at the State of the Union. He's going to be all hyped up. hyper-caffeinated, whatever it is. It's interesting that 70% of the country does like the idea of drug testing. I like the idea. They do it to athletes. They do it to horses and horse racing. Why not do it to presidential candidates? I like the idea.
Do you, Sean?
Of course he does.
I'm not sure he does, by the way, because if there actually was drug testing, I'm not sure that Donald Trump would do so well either. But anyway,
yes, they definitely want to lower expectations going into the debate. And it does seem like maybe they're setting up a pathway for Trump to just not show up, to drop out.
Well, we will see. I can't imagine how even he could
get away.
You know,
I know. Explain that.
We don't want to misunderestimate Donald Trump. One more here before we get to the GNR on the topic of Democrats stepping up and acting boldly in an election year, which shouldn't be a surprise, but frankly it is, and I am all there for it. As Joe Biden might say, this is a BFD, and frankly, one that is long overdue. Maryland's Democratic Governor Wes Moore issued a mass pardon of more than 175,000 marijuana convictions on Monday morning, one of the nation's most sweeping acts of clemency involving a drug that is now in widespread recreational use. The pardons forgive low-level marijuana possession charges in what the governor said is a step to heal decades of social and economic injustice and disproportionately harms black and brown people. Moore noted criminal records have been used to deny housing, employment, and education, holding people and their families back long after their sentences have been served. Quote, "We aren't nibbling around the edges," he said during an event to announce the move that was interrupted three times by standing ovations. "We are taking actions that are intentional, that are sweeping and unapologetic. Policy making," he said, "is powerful. And if you look at the past, you see how policies have been intentionally deployed to hold back entire communities." Moore called the scope of his pardons, quote, "the most far-reaching and aggressive executive action among officials nationwide who have sought to unwind criminal justice inequities with the growing legalization of marijuana." 9 other states and multiple cities have all pardoned hundreds of thousands of old marijuana convictions in recent years, according to the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Legalized marijuana markets reap billions now in revenue for state governments each year, as it is now legal for recreational use for the vast majority of Americans, with 24 states and the District of Columbia all now having legalized cannabis. Polls show public sentiment on the drug has also turned, with more people both embracing its use and repudiating racial disparities exacerbated by the failed decades-long war on drugs. The pardons include more than 150,000 misdemeanor convictions for simple possession of cannabis and more than 18,000 misdemeanor convictions for use or possession with intent to use drug paraphernalia. Electronic court records will reflect pardons within 2 weeks, and convictions will be eliminated from criminal background check databases within 10 months. But an individual's court record showing the pardoned conviction will still remain public unless the person in question files for an expungement from his or her record. Recreational cannabis was legalized in Maryland in 2023. Voters approved a constitutional amendment in 2022 with 67% of the vote to do that. Maryland decriminalized possession of personal use amounts of cannabis on January 1 of 2023. Nationwide, according to the ACLU, black people were more than 3 times more likely than white people to be arrested for marijuana possession, even though usage rates are about the same for both blacks and whites. President Biden, in 2022, in case you hadn't heard, issued his own mass pardons for federal marijuana convictions. That was a reprieve for roughly 6,500 people, since most marijuana-related charges are at the state level. So he urged governors to follow suit in those states where the vast majority of prosecutions take place. Well, now Wes Moore in Maryland is doing exactly that in one of the biggest moves so far. That action rivals only Massachusetts, reportedly, where the governor and an executive council together issued a blanket pardon back in March, expected to affect hundreds of thousands of people. So some good news there.
Yes.
Let's take a quick break. And as much of the nation swelters and burns, not metaphorically in this case, but literally, well, we will be back with Desi Doyen and our Green News Report. That is straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Just a quick thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help Desi Doyen and I stay on your public airwaves. You're the only thing that keeps us on those public airwaves. We don't rely on corporate support or political support. We rely on you, and your support is needed now more than ever. At bradblog.com/donate. Thank you. Well, we have been warning about this now for a few days at the very least, but
yes,
now it seems to be here across much of the country. Unprecedented heat, as discussed in our latest Green News Report.
We're looking for records coming close to over 200 cities setting those records over the next 5 days.
Heat and wildfires explode in the U.S. and in Greece and in the Middle East.
Our standard water supply has been cut in half.
Calgary grapples with water crisis. Plus, major railway ordered to pay $400 million to Native American tribe for trespassing.
Good. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You know what they'll say, though? The White House will point out that there's more production now than there's ever been before under this administration of domestic energy.
They point that out, but it's such a false headline because it should be much higher.
Oh, so it's higher under Biden than it is under Trump, but that's no good because it should be higher. Got it. Good luck with those Veep stakes. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it seems like a Fox News anchor accidentally called out a fact there, confused everybody over at Fox. What do you got for us today?
Well, first, AP reports that health officials are urging people to make plans now to stay safe amid prolonged, dangerously high temperatures over coming days. 150 million people from the Midwest to the Northeast face a long-lasting extreme heat wave that the National Weather Service expects will set new records, including high overnight lows of more than 80 degrees. A new analysis by data firm Climate Central finds that extended extreme heat waves in the U.S. today are now at least four times more likely because of human-caused climate change driven by the burning of fossil fuels.
And this is going to be a very big one from all accounts coming over the next few days, even weeks.
Yep. And it's fire weather in California, where officials say 15 fires started across the state since Saturday due to a combination of intense heat, high winds, low humidity, and unusually warm overnight temperatures. And the smoke is deadly. A new UCLA study, the first ever to analyze the effects of chronic smoke exposure, calculated that wildfire smoke killed more than 50,000 Californians between 2008 and 2018. Mm. That's because wildfire smoke contains particles tiny enough to enter the bloodstream when inhaled, increasing the risk of premature death from heart and lung disease. The study estimated the economic impacts of smoke exposure were as much as $450 billion over 10 years.
We got to get out of California. But where would we go?
Europe is also grappling with earlier than usual heat and fires.
Well, we can't go there.
Officials in Greece closed schools and ancient sites like the Acropolis in the afternoons amid the earliest heat wave ever recorded as a major wildfire rages west of Athens. In the Middle East, at least 14 Jordanian pilgrims have died of heat stroke while on the Hajj pilgrimage in Saudi Arabia as temperatures hit 116 degrees. In Africa, violent riots have erupted in drought-stricken central Algeria over months of water shortages amid a deepening multi-year drought. In Canada, Calgary is in a water crisis, not from climate change, but failing infrastructure. Significant damage was found on the city's main water feeder pipe, cutting the city's water supply in half. Repairs could take at least a month. Calgary Mayor Jody Gondek has banned outdoor fires and stepped up conservation measures to fight an early, intense wildfire season.
Bad timing.
We are going to be in a prolonged period of needing to conserve water. Yesterday, your consumption hit an all-time low, and I cannot thank you enough for taking that call to action seriously.
Better news in France. A surge in cheap renewable energy has caused French nuclear power plants to power down. Literally. Bloomberg News reports that last week in France, wholesale electricity prices turned negative thanks to robust output from cheaper solar and wind generation, pushing some French nuclear plants offline because they could not compete on price.
Excellent.
And finally, back here at home, in Washington State, a federal judge has ordered BNSF Railway to pay the Native American Swinomish tribe nearly $400 million for trespassing. The judge determined that BNSF deliberately violated a 1991 agreement, vastly increasing the number of rail cars shipping oil across the reservation's sensitive marine ecosystems, running 100 cars a day instead of just 25. The $400 million judgment is based on how much in profits BNSF made while trespassing.
That's Warren Buffett's train company, ain't it?
Yes, it is.
Good. He's got $400 million to spare. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
People all over the world, everybody, join in. Start a love tree, love tree.
We got to get out.
Yes.
Stay safe out there. My thanks to Desi Doyen, our producer, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. That's made possible by those of you kind enough to hit one of those donate buttons to help Desi and me stay on your public airwaves. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site still known as Twitter. We are the Brad Blog. I am. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.